intended to keep the inner system relatively safe by perturbing anything coming straight in from the outer system. Of more concern was the lack of a significant asteroid belt. The general plan for the Heaven project was to use the mineral wealth of asteroid belts to build the space station and future Bobs. No asteroid belt could spell trouble. One thing at a time. It took a few days to get there. I spent that time doing fine scans of the system for any sparse asteroid belts that I might have missed. No such luck. This system really had been swept clean. I had 5 planets and whatever moons they might have to work with. Planetary mining would require a lot of rethink. I also got a bead on the moons of Planet 3. There were 2 bigger ones, one about half the size of Earth's moon and one about a fifth the size, and 2 smaller ones, closer in, really not much more than big rocks. The planet itself was a little smaller than Earth, with a 0.87 surface gravity and a 26-hour rotation. The atmosphere was delightfully Earth-like, maybe a little more oxygen-rich. I inserted myself into a polar orbit and started deep scans. The planet had a lot of cloud, just like Earth. That was good, since it indicated robust weather patterns. It also had a lot of water. In fact, so far, all I'd seen was water. Have we detected land yet?
Negative.
Well, that's irritating. Alert me as soon as we find something.
Aye. Scans are complete.
But you were supposed to alert me. Oh. I examined the scans and started to laugh. Honest to God, a good belly laugh still feels good, even in VR. The planet had water, all right. Oh, did it have water. What didn't it have? Land. None. Nada. Not so much as an atoll. This was just one big ball of ocean, not even any freaking ice caps to stand on. Which raised the question of what exactly was creating the oxygen. On Earth, that would be green plants. But plants, not to put too fine a point on it, tended to require dirt. Excuse me, soil. Guppy, are you sure about the chlorophyll?
Affirmative.
Huh. Weird. I was obviously missing something. This would require a closer look. I'd gotten a message from Bill with plans for planetary exploration drones while I was still incoming, but with no raw materials to work with, I was pretty much SOL. I sighed theatrically and turned to Guppy, who was standing at parade rest as usual. I guess we'd better survey the system. Set a course to take us past each planet. Let's start with a flyby of this planet's moons.
Aye.
It took a couple of weeks to hit all the other planets and their satellites. While I was buzzing around, I did manage to catalog a couple of asteroids with relatively eccentric orbits. I sat back in my beach chair with a coffee in my hands and reviewed the reports. There was lots of metal in this system. It appeared to be a little richer than Sol, in fact. But everything was planet-side. It looked like the space junk that normally infests a system had virtually all become an impactor at some point. I could only guess that the effect of the binary partner, combined with the lack of a Jovian, had resulted in some weird chain of events that cleared the system. I'm sure an astrophysicist would have an explanation at the ready, and I promised myself I'd give that a think when I had the time. I flew out to the 4th planet, the 2nd moon of which had good ore deposits close to the surface. I set up the autofactory in orbit and fed several of my drones and roamers into it to use as construction material. A week later, the autofactory had built a couple of small cargo vessels. I loaded them up with mining drones and sent the whole crew down to the moon's surface. While I waited, I re-examined the scans of Planet 3 and pondered. I remembered reading that all of Earth's water could have been supplied by a single icy comet about 1,000 kilometers in diameter. Given the amount of material in Sol's Oort cloud, that was barely a sneeze. Since this system seemed to have had its cloud cleared, it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to think that the planets got pounded early on. While mining drones slaved away, I pondered the question of whether this world was even worth reporting as a colonization candidate. Oh, it had oxygen, and it had water, but the amount of effort required to build any kind of base would be incredible. I knew from the libraries that Earth in the 22nd century had started building and populating floating cities, but they operated only with the support of land-bound industries. Well, not my decision. I would just send in a report and let the powers that be hash it out. If there still were any powers that be, that is. The war could have wiped out humanity entirely, for all I knew, which would make this whole exercise moot. Still, eventually, Riker would report back to Bill, and Bill would transmit the news in one of his regular blogs. Until I heard different, I was going to continue to play von Neumann probe. I owed that to Dr. Landers.
Construction AMI controller is now online.
Cool. Thanks, Guppy. Order it to start on a couple of bobs, then the space station.
Aye.
The artificial machine intelligence could handle routine construction using standard plans and would contact me if it ran into any issues that were beyond its programming. The various construction tasks would take months, so I flew back to the third planet with a couple of exploration drones to look around. I started with a deep scan of the ocean and got my money's worth. I had to retune three times before I was able to detect ocean bottom. 800 kilometers deep. That was just nuts. I'd had some thought of artificial islands, but unless there was a Mount Look at That down there somewhere, there wasn't going to be anything close enough to anchor to or build up. I stared at the result in disbelief, then turned to Guppy. Start a detailed mapping survey of the ocean floor using the current sudar settings. Let me know when you have a complete globe.
Aye.
Telescopic surveys indicated some kind of green patches on the ocean, so I sent some drones down to investigate. It didn't take long to discover the source of the atmospheric oxygen. Plants had discovered that by sitting on top of the water, they could get much better light. The plants formed large mats, and by large, I mean literally kilometers in diameter. I dispatched a biology drone to take samples. The drones couldn't go underwater. That would just screw up the surge drive, something fierce. Even atmosphere required careful tuning to avoid futzing up the field. But sudar scans from in close revealed that the underwater ecosystem was rich beyond belief. Well, this is looking not so bad, suddenly. Assuming any of this is edible, people could live here and work upstairs. I looked at Guppy for a reaction. I might as well not have bothered. The biological drone spent weeks surveying the mats and immediate area. The mats actually seemed to be comprised of multiple species of plant in symbiotic relationships. The animals had found the free ride, and there was a thriving commensal zoological ecosystem in and on the mats. At the end of 2 months, I took the completed survey results and reviewed them. Biocompatible. And according to the report, exceptionally so. In fact, other than a few amino acids and vitamins, it looked like humans could go native on the mats, barring anything poisonous. I formatted a complete report and handed it off to the space station AMI to be transmitted to Bill once the station was completed. The auto factory had completed a couple of computer matrices and cradles, so I did a backup and restored it into the matrices. HIC-3821-1 and HIC-3821-2 came online. I expanded my VR to make room for company and invited them in. Two bobs popped into existence across the desk from me. I offered them beach chairs, and Jeeves brought coffee. I smiled at them. I guess you're wondering why I've gathered you here. H1 rolled his eyes. Funny. I knew you were going to say that. That got a chuckle from me, and wasn't what I'd expected, so my clones were already diverging from me. So, got ideas for names? H1 piped up. Skinner for me. I made a moo of appreciation. Keeping to the theme, I'm touched. I'm more of a Johnny Quest type, H2 said. Skinner and I chuckled dutifully. After a polite pause, I pulled up the system schematic with the autofactory area magnified in a cutaway view. Okay, you guys are going to be helping out around here until your hulls are ready to go. After that, it's up to you, of course. Both bobs nodded. Johnny said, No prob with the helping out, but I'm blowing this podunk system as soon as my vessel is ready. He turned to Skinner. It's up to you whether you want to stay or not. Personally, I'd rather go look for something a little more interesting. Well, that was a bit harsh. But his choice, of course. Skinner simply shrugged. I pointed to the image of the space station. The station is almost done. When it sends the report, Billward, we set the mining drones to automatic collection, and that really ends our responsibility here. Questions? Both Bobs shook their heads. I might stay for a while and do another round of Bobs, I continued. I'm curious about the life on 3. Poseidon would be a good name, I think.
Oh, naming it and everything. You are a sentimental sort.
Johnny was definitely a sarcastic SOB. I decided he couldn't leave soon enough for my tastes. Skinner seemed to agree with me as he was looking askance at Johnny. This seemed like Mario or Milo all over again. I remembered Bob 1 wondering what he'd do if he found he didn't like any particular clone. Turned out it didn't matter. It's a big galaxy. 5. Progress. Howard. December 2188. Omicron squared Eridani. The fence was all but finished. The town had been laid out, and now it had an official name. Landing wasn't particularly inventive, but everyone thought it was appropriate. I was on a conference call with Colonel Butterworth and Stefan, discussing the recent deaths. The colonel had his usual glass of Jameson. Stefan was calling in from the field, so his image was up in a separate window. Teleconferencing was certainly a lot easier than it had been in original Bob's lifetime, and it made things better for me, since in this context, I was as real as anyone else.
Two dead, Stefan repeated, shaking his head. A couple of raptors hid behind transport trucks hauling logs and simply walked into camp, staying out of sight. The beasts are tricky. Are we sure they aren't intelligent?
Colonel Butterworth cocked an eyebrow at him.
By which I assume you mean human-level sentient, and the answer is no. To the extent we can determine, I've discussed this with Dr. Sheehy and her staff, and they assure me that the raptors have no language beyond stereotyped verbal signaling. They use no weapons, not that they need any, and we see no evidence of structures.
He shrugged.
In the absence of some other form of evidence, they appear to be only animals. Very smart ones, but nothing more.
It doesn't have to be all or nothing, Colonel. Butterworth looked at me, one eyebrow still up.
I understand the philosophical point, Howard. However, in the real world, we are here to propagate our species. It is simply not possible to do that with a zero footprint. I would be happy to stop killing raptors if the raptors could be persuaded to stop trying to eat colonists.
He smiled.
Failing that, we and they will continue to interact in the ways that competing species have always handled such situations.
Stefan nodded and grinned at me.
And that is where we come in.
I knew there was no good answer to this discussion, and there were other things at the top of my mind. On another subject, are we on schedule to decant the rest of the colonists?
As long as the second farm donut is ready to go into full production, yes.
Butterworth took a sip of his whiskey and stared at it thoughtfully.
I'm going to have to start rationing this more stringently. The next barrel is 16 light years away, if any still exist at all.
He shook off the thought and looked at me. I ignored the comment about the Jameson. We're on schedule, Colonel. Bert and Ernie are anxious to get going back to Earth for another load. And in 35 years or so, another 20,000 people would have to find a place to settle on either Vulcan or Romulus. Would I still be here, or would I have handed it off to one of my clones by then? Stefan said,
Security is ready. The fence will be finished within 48 hours. Your observation drones are helping greatly.
I nodded to him. It's kind of ad hoc right now. Eventually I'll want to put together a really good automated system. I turned back to the colonel. Farms are ready, and I'm building up a surplus in anticipation of need.
And we have adequate shelter, although many will live in barracks for another month or two.
Colonel Butterworth looked at each of us in turn.
I think we're ready. Please pass the word to the Exodus pilots.
I grinned. Finally, opening day. I accepted a ping from Bert, and he popped into my VR. I saw that he was no longer wearing the Battlestar Galactica uniform. Well, the joke had been wearing a bit thin.
Hey, Howard,
I just got your email. Butterworth has agreed to offload the balance of the colonists? I noted Bert's obvious excitement. I guess it was a question of pride. Bert and Ernie wanted to be on the road, hauling colonists. Orbiting Vulcan, acting as floating warehouses, just didn't cut it. Bert sat and accepted a coffee from Jeeves.
It looks like Exodus 3 will be here mid-next year.
Yep. Riker told Sam to take it a bit slow on the flight to give us more lead time. We agreed to get the Spitz off Earth within 6 months of the first two ships. Nothing was said about arrival times.
Oh, lawyering. Makes the universe go round.
I smiled, then grew serious. We've needed the extra time. Milo wasn't kidding about Vulcan's ecosystem. They've had to go back and reinforce the fence, then add electrical wiring to dissuade the Brontos from chewing on it, and to keep out the raptors, and the giant snake things, and those burrowing armadillo things. I shook my head. We're making progress, but it's like wading through molasses sometimes.
Well, not really my problem.
Bert took a sip of coffee.
Shuttle start moving people down this afternoon. Just make sure you have somewhere to put them. I'm about ready to just hover over the tarmac and turn the shuttle sideways to dump them out.
He grinned to show he wasn't serious, or at least not completely so. Okay, Bert, I'll let the colonel know. He finished his coffee, disappeared the cup, and popped out with a wave.
6. Contacting Bill. Mulder, April 2171. Poseidon. Subspace Communications Universal Transceiver. Kind of forced, but we had a tradition, going back to Faith, of bad acronyms. The radio transmission from Bill contained a complete set of plans and operating instructions. So, I built the scut from Bill's transmitted plans, and now I was ready for the magic moment. I just hoped it wouldn't blow up. I flipped the switch, and the console immediately started scrolling information. Sol, Epsilon Eridani, Alpha Centauri, Omicron Squared Eridani. I followed the menu prompts and registered myself on the network, then selected Epsilon Eridani and pressed Connect. The transmitting icon came on, and I began to speak. Hi, Bill. This is Mulder out at Eta Cassiopeiae. I found Bill popped into my VR. Hi, Mulder. How's Trix? Holy. I was speechless. It was just under 20 light-years from here to Epsilon Eridani. Yet this was Bill sitting across from me in my VR. Bill laughed. It never gets old. Welcome to BobNet, instantaneous communications across interstellar space. He waggled his eyebrows at me in our standard Groucho Marx impersonation and took a sip of his coffee. I nodded slowly in appreciation. And is that your standard entrance? Oh, hell yes. And I'm keeping track, notches on the holster and all. We both laughed, and I materialized a coffee of my own. This was huge. Real-time communications changed everything. No more decades-long turnaround times for communications. So, anything interesting here? Bill waved his coffee in a vague, out-there gesture. I think so. We have a colonization target. It's not ideal, but I don't know if you're in a position to be picky, or if we even need colonization targets. Did Riker find anything? I pushed a file towards him. Bill went into Framejack for a moment while he absorbed the contents. When his avatar unfroze, he looked pleased. Not bad. I see your point, though. Colonists would have to establish a space presence immediately. Still, to answer the question, no, we're not in a position to be picky right now. And yes, Riker found something. Check out his blog on BobNet. We spent several more seconds getting caught up, and I promised to read all the blogs. Bill gave me a wave and popped out. Well, that was interesting. It appeared I should put some effort into preparing this system. The standard plan was to have a supply of refined metals available in orbit when the colonists arrived, and I'd have to ride a bestiary with detailed information. Some of the creatures in-planet were truly impressive by any definition. The Kraken, especially, needed an entire chapter of its own. Time to buckle down and get serious. 7. Back to work. Riker,
July 2171, Sol. I looked at my list of to-dos for the day and sighed. I was a little surprised at how much I was missing my family. Julia and Clan Bob were all aboard Exodus 3, in stasis, heading for Omicron Squared Eridani. There would be no contact until they arrived at their destination and were revived. I tried to remind myself that it was an eye blink at my life scale, but any way I looked at it, I would still have to experience every day of those 17 years. 24-hour days since I didn't sleep, experienced in millisecond intervals. This train of thought seemed destined to send me into a deep funk. With an effort of will, I brought myself to task. The first item, as always, was a status check on colony ship construction. I checked the summary window rather than doing a personal inspection. Unless some significant step was due, I didn't need to micromanage. At that moment, Charles popped into my VR. "Hey, Riker." One of the first clones I'd made here in the solar system. Charles was still hanging around and helping out. He knew the politics of Earth almost as well as I, and the location of everything in the rest of the system far better. If he ever decided to leave, it would be crippling. "Charles, what's up?"
"I wanted to update you on the sabotage."
"So, what's the scoop?"
It looks like we've got two different groups working. Vehement is definitely behind the attacks on infrastructure. They've left the usual calling cards afterwards. Everything is designed to target food production. They're very tech-savvy and obviously know what they're doing.
Vehement appeared to be some kind of radical environmental group whose ultimate goal was to save the world by removing humanity. And they weren't picky about ethical questions when it came to their methods. Charles popped up a couple of images and samples of the Vehement statements. He waited for me to review them before continuing. Some were the typical pompous ravings of self-important people, all pronouncements and assertions written with nose firmly in the air. Others were acerbic and even ironic. This latest fell into the latter category. "A friendly reminder that you are a scourge on the universe. Do it a favor and disappear. This public service message brought to you by Voluntary Extinction of Human Existence means Earth's natural transformation." Charles continued when he saw he had my attention.
"The attacks on Florianopolis don't fit the profile, though. There's no announcement afterwards, and the attacks seem aimed at maximizing fatalities rather than damaging infrastructure. They're not sophisticated either, mostly just brute force explosives. I think those are just attacks on Brazil, or what's left of it. There's still a lot of resentment against them for the war."
I nodded thoughtfully. This confirmed my private opinion. "That also means the second group might not be a single organization. It could be multiple groups or even independent individual actions."
"Agreed. For all that, more people are dying in those acts. It's less of a long-term issue and can be handled by local law enforcement. The Vehement stuff worries me a lot more."
"Mm-hmm. They haven't gotten at any of our space-based assets, but considering the technological expertise they've already displayed, I wouldn't be surprised if they figured out a way."
I had my mouth open to describe the steps I was taking to track them down, but then hesitated. I wasn't entirely sure why. I couldn't realistically suspect Charles of anything, but I got a sudden feeling that I should play this close to the vest. Vehement was good. Maybe they could decrypt communications between Bobs. I had implemented full scanning of all communications in the solar system. A half dozen Amys monitored all communications, watching for keywords or patterns. It was a scattershot tactic, but I really had no other options. There was no reason to inform the other Bobs. I wanted them to act natural anyway. Charles interrupted my train of thought.
"How's the construction going?"
I was just checking that. Generally still on track. I'm going to check with Homer next about food production." Charles nodded.
"Okay, let me know if you need any help in that area."
I gave Charles a nod and he saluted and popped out. Next on the list was food production. I sent Homer a quick text about the space-based production facilities
and he reported that the wheels of industry were turning smoothly. I smiled at his response. I'd taken to calling him General Bull Moose, and rather than take offense, he thought it was hilarious. Typical Homer. My smile disappeared as I pored over the attached spreadsheet. Food production Earthside continued to drop as the climate deteriorated. The pounding that the planet had taken during the war was sending Earth into an ice age. As the glaciers advanced and snow accumulated farther and farther from the poles, arable land became tundra, then tundra became ice. We had to balance food production with moving higher latitude enclaves into more equatorial locations. Homer's space-based farms were taking a lot of the pressure off. As each farm donut was spun up and began producing crops, we were able to move estimated time of habitable Earth remaining later by a couple of years. The farm donuts were Homer's idea, and he ran them like a military operation. However, the 30,000 people we'd managed to get off planet so far were barely a drop in the bucket. 15 million human beings were all that was left of Homo sapiens. But it was still a lot of bodies to move. 1,500 ships or 1,500 trips. I put down the document and took a moment to massage my forehead. The UN session had started a few minutes ago, and I needed to be there. Highlight of my day, for sure. Not. Since the departure of the USE and Spitz enclaves in the first two ships, I didn't really have anyone I talked with regularly. All the other enclaves maintained a very arm's-length relationship, except for a few, like New Zealand, who were actively antagonistic. Between that and my relatives being in stasis, I felt very isolated these days. Well, at least today's session would be interesting. We'd just gotten word about Poseidon from Mulder at Eta Cassiopeiae. The biology was compatible, and the floating mats were more than adequate to live on, at least in the short term. Longer term, the system had enough resources to support construction of floating cities. Several of the smaller island nation enclaves had expressed an interest. The problem was one of priority. Exodus 4 and 5 were almost finished. Would we send one to Poseidon, or send both to Omicron Squared Eridani? The member from the Maldives was speaking. Representative Sharma was campaigning hard on behalf of the tropical island nations. Common wisdom held that they should be last out since their climate was still the most moderate.
Yes, as the representative from Vancouver Island has pointed out repeatedly, the Maldives and other equatorial nations still have moderate climates. What the representative has failed to do is explain why that matters. If we emigrate, our lands become available for those in extreme hardship. Either way, the hardship cases are ameliorated.
She motioned to the image of Poseidon.
The important question is whether we settle a second system or whether we continue to pour all of our emigrants into Omicron Squared Eridani. We are better off now as a species than we were a few years ago. We are spread through two star systems, but three systems would be better, and four even more so. All other things being equal, let us at least go for three. The challenge to the member from Vancouver Island and to other objectors is to show specifically why things are not equal and not by using faulty associations.
Representative Sharma stuck out her chin defiantly, held the pose for just the right beat, then released the audio, giving up the floor. I wanted to clap, but that would be unseemly. I really had no particular skin in the game on this issue, but I agreed about distributing humanity as widely as possible. The species had just finished almost wiping itself out in a single system. You'd think people would grow a brain. I looked at the board. More than half of the request to speak indicators were lit up. I sighed, disconnected from my public avatar for a moment, massaged my forehead again, and wondered for the thousandth time how I'd let myself get roped into this duty. I hoped today they'd call for a vote. 8. Farming Satellites. Howard, April 2189, Vulcan. The holotank glowed with overlapping information windows, all competing for attention. Several nodes blinked red, demanding immediate input. I cranked up my frame rate a little. Not enough to overload the VR hardware, just enough to be able to get ahead of all the demands on my attention. Guppy, you've got coordination of the drone mule team, right?
Affirmative.
Good thing. I thought my head was about to explode. We were about to spin up the third farm donut, which would increase our capacity just in time for the arrival of the third colony ship. Farm 1 and Farm 2 were already in full operation, generating a comfortable 0.25G in the rim. Riker and Homer had found through trial and error that crops didn't do well below that level of gravity. Specialized drones maintained the farm sections, which were producing all the kudzu you could eat. Yum! Of course, I didn't have to eat it, what with being a computer and all, but the humans were not so lucky. Until the colonies were to the point of being self-sustaining, everyone's daily calorie intake was up to 50% kudzu. And because of kudzu's digestive side effects, meals and other social gatherings tended to be outside or involve open windows. One of the status windows dinged. Guppy was starting the spin-up of Farm 3. After a lot of debate, filled with discussion of gyroscopes, compressed air propulsion, and traditional JATO units, Homer had settled on a very old-school system for spinning up the orbital farms, which we were still using. We tethered four drones to the rim with cables 90 degrees apart and had them fly in circles until we achieved the proper RPM. Primitive, but effective. I watched the status displays as Farm 3 came up to speed. No issues, and more importantly, no sabotage. It seemed that Vehement was either still completely confined to the Sol system, or they hadn't acquired any assets here, but we didn't know how many members might have gone out with the various colony ships. We would have to be vigilant until humanity was well enough established to survive its own craziness. I shook my head. Enough daydreaming. I ran final checks on Farm 3, then directed Guppy to start planting operations. Farm 3 would grow regular crops, vegetables, wheat, berries, stuff people actually wanted to eat. I really needed to get this right, or there would be talk of lynching. Coming up on Beacon, 50 clicks and closing. Sam's image floated beside the system schematic. Exodus 3 was on track to merge neatly with the L4 point shared by the twin planets, Vulcan and Romulus. The Vulcan colony had declared a holiday, as it was unlikely anyone would be getting anything done anyway. I was transmitting my displays down to the Landing City Network, which was broadcasting out to every TV in town. Exodus 3 slid up beside the communication beacon without as much as a wobble. Sam ran through his shutdown checklist and changed status to station keeping. With the formalities out of the way, I popped over to his VR. "Welcome, Howard. Pull up a chair." Sam waved a coffee mug in the general direction of a Victorian wingback. I looked around his VR. It had the feel of an old English drawing room, the kind of place Sherlock Holmes might have hung out. Sam was drinking a coffee, but a quick inspection of the menu showed that I could order from a broad selection of drinks. I decided to see how well Sam had simulated cognac. I indicated my choice to Jeeves and sat down. "I've started to decant the setup crews," Sam said. "I looked over the maps and resource summaries that you provided. Pretty thorough." He grimaced for a fraction of a millisecond. "No doubt Cranston will still find something to complain about." I accepted the glass of cognac from Jeeves and took a moment to taste it. "Not bad." "Quite good, really." Sam had obviously spent some time getting it right. I set a to-do to ask him for the template. I put the glass down and leaned forward. "Your colonists will really need to tread lightly on Romulus. Milo was right. There was a recent extinction event, and the ecosystem is still very shallow. No large-scale clearing, and especially don't let any Terran biota get loose. Make sure both colony groups understand that." Sam nodded, eyes focused on infinity. With an obvious effort, he turned his attention back to me. "You're really lucky, Howard, getting to see the colonies in the early stages like this. A lot more exciting than driving a bus. I'll be leaving in a month or two to go pick up another load." "Sure, Sam, but I keep a blog, and lots of videos of anything that's even remotely interesting. Yeah, it's not real time, but the universe is our playground now, you know?" He grinned in response. We spent a few seconds getting caught up on gossip, then moved on to the serious business of
setting up a colony of 10,000 people on an alien world. Just another day at the office. Only 2 days after the first Faith and Spitz personnel were decanted and everyone was already at war. Or maybe back at war was more accurate. The three-way battle between the USE, Faith, and the Spitsbergen Enclave for berths in the first colony ships had been a major pain in the ass for Riker back at Earth. It appeared that not much had changed, and now I'd inherited the problem. You couldn't actually come to blows in a video conference, of course, but the blustering and yelling more than made up for the lack of bloodshed. I put my head in my hand and shook it slowly back and forth. It took a few seconds for everyone to notice, then the yelling petered out. "Tell you what," I said. "How does pistols at dawn sound? Three ways. That should be interesting." President Valter looked slightly sheepish, Minister Cranston indignant, and Colonel Butterworth amused, but at least they'd shut it. The three colony leaders settled themselves behind their desks and waited for me to continue. "I understand a certain amount of competitiveness," I said, looking at each person's image in turn. "But isolationism will just get you dead. And I sure as hell will not buttress any such attitude with extra support." Cranston's face turned red. "You are not in charge, replicant. We will make our own decisions about what's best for us. What makes you think you have the right to dictate, or for that matter, the moral high ground?" I tilted my head and smiled innocently at the leader of the Faith colony. I'm trying to remember now. Of all of us here, everyone who didn't participate in a war that virtually destroyed the human race, please raise your hand. I raised a hand and waited a moment to see if anyone else would have the gall to do so. "I'm a neutral party here, Mr. Cranston. Yeah, even with jerks who treat me as a piece of equipment instead of addressing me by name. But I'm also a volunteer. I'll help who I want, and I'll leave if I want. As a good leader, you should take that datum into account when deciding how much of an idiot you want to be." I glared at the three video windows. No one responded. After a moment of awkward silence, Valter said, "Very well. We will trade some of our decanted livestock, if necessary, for future considerations. Howard, I am hoping you will act as adjudicator in such cases."
"Absolutely, Mr. Valter.
And thank you. Colonel, some breeding stock now will help you until we're finished forced growing the animals in the artificial wombs." I turned to Cranston. "Minister, your repayment should consist of setting up and running a large batch of artificial wombs to take the pressure off the Spitz. The both of you can pay them back with interest once your own stock is high enough." I looked around at the various windows. No one commented. With a sigh, I checked my agenda for the next discussion item.
"You show a lot more patience than Riker ever did."
Colonel Butterworth raised a glass of Jameson toward me. "Thanks, Colonel, I think. We Bobs are definitely different as individuals. I wonder why they never picked up on that back on Earth when they were working on the whole replicant thing." Butterworth shrugged. Sciencey stuff like that didn't interest him, except to the extent it affected his job. He poked at a pile of paper on his desk.
"This native vine that I mentioned before is turning into a significant problem. The level of invasiveness puts anything from Earth to shame, except possibly bamboo. If we don't get ahead of it, we might end up expending all our energy just beating it back."
The native ecosystem has the home court advantage, unfortunately. Doesn't it serve as food for any native species?
As far as my scientists can tell, it contains a toxin of some kind that the native browsers find disagreeable. Even the Brontos won't eat it, and they are the unpickiest herbivores I've ever seen."
I laughed. The Brontos would eat almost anything that provided net calories. They would eat all the leaves from a tree, then the twigs, then the bark from the main trunk, and branches. What they left behind looked very sad. Fortunately, Vulcan trees could survive having their bark stripped. The Brontos had even started munching on the fence when they could get close enough. A couple of strings of electrified wire had nipped that habit before it could catch on. "How does it affect people?" Butterworth shook his head.
The vine is not edible as such. However, the toxin doesn't seem particularly effective against Terran biology. As soon as we have some livestock, we'll see if they'll eat it.
I nodded silently. Colonizing an alien planet, as with everything else, was more complicated than TV and movies let on. Clearing the land and building houses was just the beginning. We had neither the resources nor the desire to commit planetary ecological genocide, and doing so would doom the colony anyway. But learning to live here was going to be a case of mutual accommodation. Fortunately, so far, no alien diseases had found humans compatible. I wasn't really surprised. Even Terran viruses were generally specialized for a specific species or lifestyle. Eventually, something would make the jump, but by then we would hopefully be ready for it. The colonel brought up a few more minor items, then we signed off. So far, so good. But my movie-conditioned mind was still waiting for the inevitable disaster. 9. Something is out there. Bob, September 2169, Delta Eridani. Marvin popped in and started to speak several times without success. I couldn't identify the expression on his face, but it reminded me of a fish that had just eaten a lemon. Something was definitely up. I'd been going over the auto factory schedule with Guppy. I turned back to him. It doesn't look like there are any surprises. Make the changes I've listed and let me know if anything goes off schedule.
Arr!
Guppy blinked huge fish eyes once and disappeared. Marvin was still doing a pretty good imitation of a fish himself. I grinned at him. Come on, Marv, spit it out. You know you want to... He took a deep breath. Something, and by something, I mean damned if I know what, hunted the Deltans almost to extinction at their original location. Say what? I found a number of disarticulated Deltan remains in different places, so it wasn't just a one-time thing. The damage was not indicative of gorilloids. We've seen their work. They're lazy. They strip the meat, not even thoroughly, then go back for a new victim. Whatever this was, it did the full workup, and chew marks on the bones indicate something much bigger than a gorilloid. I sat back and rubbed my chin and thought for a moment. So there's another apex predator out there. Great. I may have to break out the exploration drones and put them on a kilometer-by-kilometer survey. I think that would be a good idea, buddy. If we have the printer cycles to spare, maybe print up a few more sets of drones. Of course, because screwing with the auto factory schedule is never a problem. I stood up, stretched, and wandered to the end of the library, gazing at nothing. After a moment's thought, I pulled up the files from my initial exploration of Delta Eridani 4. I knew that my survey had been less than thorough, but I wasn't a professional exobiologist, assuming such a job had ever even existed. And once I'd found the Deltans, everything else had taken a back seat. I replaced the library bookshelves with a blank wall and spread the images of the fauna I'd cataloged across its length. Pacing along the collage of images, I tried to imagine any of them able to take out a full-grown Deltan. Marvin materialized a lazy boy and settled in with a coffee. Spike immediately assumed an invitation and hopped up to settle in his lap. The collage offered no inspiration. The leopard analogs and the gorilloids were really the only animals I'd encountered that would prey on Deltans, and they just didn't fit the bill. I waved a hand and killed the collage. In frustration, I canceled the room VR and activated my Deltan Village VR. Marvin jerked in surprise and Spike leaped up and fled. I felt a moment's guilt for not warning him. Marvin gave me the Spock eyebrow, and I answered with an apologetic grimace, then turned and started walking through the village. The recording was incredibly detailed, but still, just a recording. No interaction was possible. I wished for the millionth time that I could interact with the Deltans through something a little more immediate than a floating mechanical football. Finally, I turned back to Marvin, who had refused to give up his lazy boy. He was reclining, drinking a coffee, right in the middle of a group of Deltans who were skinning a pigoid. I laughed and he grinned back. Okay, Marvin, let's get going on that search. Guppy? Guppy popped into existence.
You rang?
Cute. I suspected that Marvin was feeding lines to Guppy just to bug me. Printer schedule change, Guppy. Print up 4 more complete squads of exploration drones. Looks like we're going snipe hunting. Guppy's huge fish eyes blinked.
This will result in another delay in the armaments project. I remind you that you have assigned that project high priority.